Hi, everyone. This is the Partners for Progressive Israel podcast. This is your host, Guy Frankel. This is our very first podcast out of Israel, so I'd like to welcome all of our listeners. In the weeks leading up to the elections, we'll be interviewing politicians, activists, and others involved in the progressive movement in Israel. My guest today is Hillel Shenker. He's a co-founder of the Peace Now movement, an editor of the New Outlook Israeli Peace magazine, which is the forerunner of the Palestine-Israel Journal. And he's a co-editor of the Palestine-Israel Journal, which is a Jerusalem-based magazine run by Israeli and Palestinian academics in Jerusalem. So thank you, Hillel, for joining us today.
Yes, Guy, pleasure to be with you and pleasure to have you in Tel Aviv.
So before I start some questions about the elections, I just wanted to ask you two things. You mentioned to me that you had attended the Jerusalem Book Fair last week with the Palestine-Israel Journal. You had a booth there.
Yes, yes. I think it was extremely important. The Jerusalem International Book Fair is held every 2 years, and for a long time it was the second most important international book fair in the world after Frankfurt. And the fact that we had a booth which with a big sign which said Palestine-Israel Journal in the current atmosphere, I think was an important statement. And we had very interesting interactions with the general public and also with the professionals.
Can you give me any examples, any negative blowback?
Well, yes. Let me tell you that on the first night, a lot of people who don't normally come to book fairs were there because what they organized was a performance by a popular singer and free wine. So a lot of people who come to hear popular singers and to drink free wine found themselves also at a book fair. And they came and they saw the Palestine-Israel Journal booth and they said two things. One, why are you perpetrating a myth, this myth that there is a Palestinian people? And secondly, that map, we had a map on the cover of our latest issue, which was devoted to natural resources and the Israeli-Arab conflict, which had a picture of the State of Israel in the 67 borders, and there over on the right is the West Bank, and there on the left is the Gaza Strip, and around us is the Arab world. And there were people who didn't like that map because they would have preferred to see a map of Greater Israel, and they don't understand why we, you know, as far as they're concerned, the 67 borders don't exist anymore. Now, perhaps another very interesting anecdote is that one of the people who came by the booth was actually an architect whose father was a physician in the 1948 War of Independence. And he said to us, I'm very pessimistic about the outcome of the elections, and you should take a photo of your booth with that sign, Palestine-Israel Journal, because after the elections, if Netanyahu is reelected, you may not be allowed in the next book fair to be able to have such a booth with that name. I, of course, disagreed. I'm a little more optimistic than he is. I do hope, I believe that there is a chance that we can have a center-left government in place of the current government. And in any event, he did buy a copy of the issue.
Did you have any blowback, I guess, from the opposing side? Were there any Palestinian Arabs who showed up who were in any way?
Well, this is also interesting. The fair took place in West Jerusalem at a new, very hip venue called HaTachana Rishona, the first station, which was actually built on the location of the end of the line of the old train that used to come from Jaffa to Jerusalem since 1893. That closed down, I believe, in 2007, and now there it's an entertainment center. And someone asked, why wasn't our circulation and publicity manager, Najat, why didn't she come to the fair? Why didn't we see her photos there? And I discussed this with her, and she said she loves to be at such events and to interact with the audience, but she wears a scarf on her head. She is a devout Muslim who prays five times a day, and yet we've been working together now for every day for almost 10 years. And she said, "I'm afraid to come to West Jerusalem today, following what happened last summer after the kidnapping and killing of the three Israelis, and then the horrible murder of the young Palestinian, and then, of course, the war. Most Palestinian women, particularly those who wear scarves,
because they're so conspicuous,
they are immediately, they have been attacked. They feel that they get stares, they get very threatening stares, but there has also been attacks from right-wing ruffians, whatever the term is in English today. And she simply said, I was afraid to come. And there were very few Palestinians at the fair. There was some of the maintenance people were Palestinian men. And one of them came over to our booth. We, in addition to the Palestine Israel Journal, we hosted three other publishers. Our Palestinian neighbor and editorial board member, Walid Salim, who runs the Center for Democracy and Community Development, placed material that he had published in Arabic at our booth. We had a fascinating, innovative Israeli-Palestinian atlas for creative thinking, essentially, which was a final project of a student at the Bezalel Arts College, which was brought to us by a German publisher. And then we had Sufi poetry translated into Hebrew, which was
from Persian or from Arabic?
From Persian.
Okay.
Persian, which was brought to us by our friend Jakub, who runs the Olama Katan, Little World Bookshop in the German colony in Jerusalem. And the Arab maintenance man, he was a Palestinian from East Jerusalem, came over and he said, "I know that book. I printed it." Because he works normally his regular work is working in a printing shop. And he said, "You know, that's my book. I printed the book." The other Palestinians who came by were the owners of the very good bookshop in East Jerusalem called the Educational Bookshop, which has one branch on Salah Ad-Din Street, and the other branch, they now took over the famous bookshop at the American Colony Hotel. They came by and said hello, and I asked them, "Why don't you have a booth here as well? You should." And they said, "Well, we are just booksellers. We are not book publishers. But we have a lot of friends here at the fair, so that's why we came by, and you know, they consider us friends as well."
So while we're on the subject of East Jerusalem, I wanted to tie this all in to the elections. And I wanted to get an idea from you how East Jerusalem might feel about the upcoming elections in Israel. Do they feel that there's any chance that there will be some sort of sea change? Do they feel that even if the center-left takes power, that it will be more of the same and they sort of resign themselves to not seeing much of a change on the ground?
Well, first of all, the elections are not particularly on the mind and agenda of the East Jerusalem Palestinians and the Palestinians in the West Bank in general. In our discussions at the Palestine Israel Journal, editorial board, and brainstorming sessions, etc., which continue all the time, no matter whether there's an intifada or a war, we still continue to meet and work together. What my Palestinian colleagues say is, first of all, Israeli society is moving to the right, and they don't really believe that it is possible for the center-left to win the election. And secondly, the other thing they say is, even if Herzog does become prime minister, they don't believe that he will be capable of really initiating anything, a serious peace process. They don't believe that he will be capable of confronting the settlers. And so they're extremely pessimistic about anything positive coming out of these elections. And essentially what they are saying is that they're no longer looking towards hope from the Israeli political system, and the answer is more likely in terms of movement towards an end of the occupation. And
there'll be international.
It would be, exactly. It would be, they're depending more on the international community than they are of a change coming from within Israel.
I also wanted to ask you about the joint Arab list. I mean, is that being paid attention to by Palestinians in East Jerusalem? Do they feel that, because according to the latest polls, it seems as though the joint Arab list is polling fairly high, and I believe will possibly make up the third largest bloc in the Knesset, and we've already heard politicians from that party talking about how this time around they'll be demanding much more important portfolios as a result. Does that influence East Jerusalemites at all? Does that give them even a glimmer of hope that if Israeli Arabs...
Well, the general context of how East Jerusalem Palestinians and West Bank Palestinians, much less Gaza Palestinians, look at their brothers within the state of Israel, the Palestinian Israeli citizens, is that they really will work out their issues within the state of Israel. Whatever they do, it does not really affect the ongoing daily life of Palestinians in the West Bank, Gaza, or East Jerusalem. So they may be, observing the fact that this is going on, but they don't expect it to have much impact on their life.
Well, the reason I ask is because I remember in the context of Oslo and Labin making overtures that at the time, despite the fact that the Arab parties were not sitting within the coalition, they were supporting Labin from the outside.
That's
and
right.
So there was definitely,
right.
But then that, I think that's...
Well, there's no question that one of the keys to the possibility of a center-left alternative government will be a significant increase in the Arab vote. Because till now, the Arab Israelis have essentially voted in Hebrew, in other words, they expressed their opinions by not voting in the national elections, 10% to 15% less than the Jewish average, whereas they have the same average in the municipal elections because they have felt until now that there the vote makes a difference. They can have an impact on their own community lives, but they didn't feel that they had an impact on the national scene. And there was no question in my mind that if there will be a significant increase because of the enthusiasm about the very fact that there is a joint list of the four parties running together. As a matter of fact, there was an announcement today that the Bedouin former member of Knesset, Talib Asana, who had said he would set up his own little Bedouin party, announced, "I'm not going to do that. I'm going to express my support for the entire list, for the joint list." So if there is going to be a change, then they are really one of the main game changers. And so the signs are encouraging, but we will see to what degree.
Now, I wanted to move on to the subject of BDS and anti-normalization. I hear from a lot of people working in East Jerusalem, working in the West Bank, that slowly but surely it's become more and more difficult for them to do their work. They feel that their Palestinian colleagues are slowly distancing themselves, and they're fed up with the situation. Has that affected your work at all? Certainly, I mean, not just in the last few years, but specifically in the last half year.
Well, I'll tell you two things. One is that already a few years ago, we had to make a change in our operating procedures because after the publication of every issue, we always organize a public launching conference in East Jerusalem, which is essentially a conference for Israeli, Palestinian, and international audience about the theme of the issue. And when we were organizing a conference at the end of, it was the end of 2011, beginning of 2012, because it was devoted to the Arab Spring, which began in the January of 2011, there was pressure against Palestinian speakers who had been announced in an ad which was published in the Al-Quds Daily newspaper. What we always do before each conference is publish an ad in Haaretz in Israel and in Al-Quds in East Jerusalem. And when the names of Palestinian speakers appeared, there was public pressure against them and also against the venue, the hotel which was going to host it. And the owner, the day before the conference, who happens to be an Arab Israeli, not a Palestinian from East Jerusalem, said, "I don't want to mix business and politics. I'm going to have to back down on my agreement to host the conference." And what happened was that therefore we decided to change our strategy, and when we send out announcements for conferences which we are continuing to hold, joint Israeli-Palestinian conferences, we only send them out on the internet and don't publish them in the press. In any event, a lot of what is happening has moved over to social media, to email and Facebook, etc. So this is how things are organized. And so that we did have that change. On the other hand, I think it's very important to stress that at the journal, I'm the Israeli co-editor, Ziad Abu Ziad is the Palestinian co-editor. We have 16 Palestinian members of the editorial board, 16 Israeli members of the editorial board, and we continue to work together. There is a commitment on both sides, and whenever the issue, the question of the future of the journal comes up, what my colleague Ziad Abu Ziad says, he never will say the challenge to the future is because of BDS or because of anti-normalization, as it's called here, because he and the other members of the PIJ editorial board are totally committed to the idea of working together with progressive Israelis, given the fact that both we and they know that our future will be intertwined. And they also believe very much in working with Israeli partners to achieve a resolution of the conflict. He will always say the challenge is not from those who oppose this within Palestinian society, but the challenge is financial. If we aren't able to find the necessary funds to continue our not-for-profit operations, that would be what would cause us to close, not any opposition. At the same time, it is clear that our generation, my generation and my colleague Ziad Abu Ziad's generation, most of the members of the editorial board are veteran academics, journalists, civil society activists who have been working together for many years and who have built a sense of ongoing trust within the context of a working relationship which has gone through extremely difficult circumstances. The younger generation, both on the Palestinian and the Israeli side, they simply don't know each other. For the Palestinians, since the separation barrier was established, whereas 200,000 Palestinians used to work in Israel, today there is something like 40,000, 50,000, and only of a certain age, certain profile, are allowed to come in and work. The average younger Palestinian sees Israelis as either only settler or soldier and not as average civilian wanting to go on with their lives, or much less also civilian peace activists who are seeking an answer to an end to the occupation and the achievement of a two-state solution. And on the Israeli side, in the younger generation, although you do have a core group of young generation people, and you have also organizations such as and Combatants for Peace and Breaking the Silence, and of course the bereaved parents circle, the average Israeli also doesn't care either about the Palestinians or about the settlers, for that matter. They just want to go on with their lives and leave them alone, and they don't really believe there's a chance, in any event, for a resolution of the conflict. So you have a major problem in the younger generation, on both sides, in terms of a readiness to work together. And on the Palestinian side, there's no question the motivation for BDS is a sense of desperation, a sense of nothing else has worked. And so maybe that will work.
Yeah.
Maybe that will work. That's their perception.
So you talked a little bit about the situation on the ground during book fair and how that affected people's behavior at the book fair. Do you feel that things are calmer now overall since the summer? Do you think that there's another chance for a flare-up of violence? Or have Israeli authorities sort of understood that they need to really back off when it comes to the subject of the Temple Mount? Because it seems that things have improved a bit. I note that the Jordanian ambassador to Israel returned fairly recently. And it seems like there are, we still hear here and there reports of stabbings, but things have seemingly gotten quieter. Do you think is that an illusion? Do you think there's a chance for another flare-up relatively soon?
Well, it's not an illusion. A very strong message was sent to the Israeli government from the Jordanians, the Egyptians, the Americans, the Europeans, the international community in general, about the sensitivity of the situation on the Temple Mount, Haram al-Sharif, as it's known in Arabic, or the Noble Sanctuary. And also, not only external messages, there were also messages that came from the Israeli security authorities saying to Netanyahu and the government that you have got to control this. And so that, Netanyahu and also Defense Minister Yaalon did get that message, and they are trying to control this. That is at least right now, in terms of before the elections, although we did see a certain amount of provocations take place, and there is always this danger that the right, when it feels that it's in trouble, and they do feel to some degree vulnerable, they might begin provocations on our borders or in the West Bank or even in Jerusalem in order to make security, once again, the key issue of the campaign. And when security is the key issue, it tends to favor the right, because that's when the average Israeli feels vulnerable and anxiety and tends to prefer the perceived strong leader, which is how Netanyahu presents himself, and also the public prefers not to take risks. So there is this danger that there will be further provocations, further incidents. But the deeper problem is what happens in the longer run. If there is no significant breakthrough and movement towards a resolution of the conflict, towards an end to the occupation, towards the achievement of a two-state solution based on a Palestinian state in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, alongside the State of Israel, with mutually agreed upon border rectifications. If we don't move in that direction, then we will be fated to have a continued cycle of violence. We had three Israel-Gaza wars since 2009, 2012, 2014, the summer of 2014. The situation in Gaza is desperate. The situation of the Palestinian Authority is very shaky. And one of the possibilities on the agenda, besides the fact that there can be another round with Gaza and also with Hezbollah in Lebanon, is the fact that the Palestinian Authority might decide, the leaders, to just simply give the keys back to Israel and say, okay, you're not helping move towards a resolution of the conflict. So you take responsibility for everything. Take responsibility from the West Bank, for East Jerusalem, etc. And let's see how you manage with that.
I imagine that that would be much more of an economic burden than any sanctions, because it doesn't really seem that anyone's taking sanctions all that seriously or really considering sanctions all that seriously. We do hear about the EU considering settlement sanctions, but I don't even know if they're sanctions so much as they are the labeling of products. So I imagine that what you suggested, collapse of the PA or the PA simply handing over the keys, so to speak, to the Israelis, would be much more costly from an economic point of view than...
It would be very costly, but I also wouldn't just discount the impact of the growing sense of isolation that Israel is entering in the international community. And I can assure you that the Israeli business community is very concerned about that. That's why they founded an initiative called Breaking the Impasse. And they've had meetings with Netanyahu. They went to the World Economic Forum in Davos. And they're all saying, if we don't have a significant initiative to move forward to end the conflict, then the Israeli business and economy in general is going to suffer. So I wouldn't also discount that as a factor which will have greater impact on Israel. And there's no doubt in my mind that if Netanyahu is reelected, the international community will step up measures, what you mentioned, the ideas that are being discussed in the EU about strengthening steps against anything connected to the settlement enterprise and over the Green Line. And I don't think that BDS per se is something that is going to end the occupation. But I do think that, and of course I do not see governments around the world being ready to support the type of boycott activities that were supported during the struggle over apartheid in South Africa. But greater isolation, I believe, and many of us in the Israeli peace movement also support the idea that the international community should become more involved, because if we, the Israelis and Palestinians, cannot generate a resolution on our own, we need the help of the international community. And the Israel historically, the Zionist movement, the history of Zionism and the establishment of the State of Israel and many key crossroads in Israeli history were based upon the foundation of international community activity, beginning with the Balfour Declaration and then the UN Partition Plan Resolution. At the last conference that we held after the publication of our most recent issue, we had two sessions. One was devoted to the central theme of the issue, which was the natural resources and the Arab-Israeli conflict, which is a very key cross-border issue concerning resources and the environment, etc. And we also had a session on the Israel-Gaza war, what next, because given what we all experienced this summer, it was impossible not to relate to the trauma of the summer. And one of the speakers was Dr. Alon Leal, who is the former Director General of the Israeli Foreign Ministry, former ambassador to South Africa and to Turkey. And he was the initiator of a public appeal by hundreds. Eventually, we reached actually 1,000 Israelis who are in all walks of life, many prominent Israelis, calling upon the international community to recognize a Palestinian state alongside the State of Israel, calling on the various European parliaments and also the UN to have a new UN Security Council resolution. And one of the things that he said there was that in doing this, in being part of Israeli civil society, reaching out to the international community, I feel I'm doing the most Zionist act possible, because this is in our interest, the interest of the State of Israel, the interest of the future of our society for our children and our grandchildren, etc. And so calling on the international community to be proactive and to be more involved in helping to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is not only a Palestinian strategy. That will be, incidentally, the theme of our next issue, the Palestinian internationalization strategy. It is also an Israeli interest, and it's a strategy of the Israeli peace movement to work together with our Palestinian colleagues and to call for the international community to be involved. Definitely if Netanyahu is reelected, but also if we have a center-left government, we will need the help of the international community to resolve the conflict. And here a very important factor will be the Arab Peace Initiative, which was resolved in 2002 at the Beirut Arab League Summit Conference, an initiative, a historic initiative, which offers Israel recognition and normalization with the entire Arab world and the entire Muslim world, because the 57 member state Muslim Islamic Cooperation Organization also backed it, all based on the idea that this will take place if Israel enables a Palestinian state to be established in the West Bank, Gaza, with East Jerusalem as its capital, and an agreed upon resolution of the refugee problem. This is all out there on the table, and we need the international community, the League of Arab States, the EU, the UN, the American government, to help us achieve an Israeli-Palestinian peace for the sake of both peoples.
Thank you, Hillel, for joining us today. That's all the time we have. You can check out our other activities at www.partnersforisrael.org. And you can check us out on Twitter at Partners for Israel, and our Facebook page, Partners for Progressive Israel. Join us next time when we'll be talking to Tamar Zandberg, MK for the Marriage Party. This is Guy Frankel. Thank you.